seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1.
All right, folks, it is another edition of Radio Free Kafiristan. Welcome. Every Tuesday evening, we always make sure we play these hell's bells because in the lands that are ruled by the Sharia, Christians cannot ring their church bells. But since we're in Kafiristan, we make sure we ring them nice and loud here. All right, well, Kufar Akbar, everybody, hello. This is another edition of Radio Free Kafiristan. This is a radio program dedicated to rightly dividing the truth between Christianity and Islam. We examine the evidence for both of these faiths in order to arrive at the truth that leads us to the end. Those go, I plea, or peace, shalom, and blessings to everybody. This is your humble host, Eric Thekifer, coming to you live from the cavernous depths of the Kafir Cave in Dar al-Harb, Kafiristan. I got something tying my tongue tonight, and I apologize for that. We are here every Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. And once again, we are live casting on StreamYard, and we're streaming it out to two different locations on Facebook, the Crescent the Crescent page, and also the Radio Free Kafiristan page. And, of course, we are on YouTube, streaming to YouTube. I don't think I fixed the YouTube thing. Can somebody go over to the YouTube page and check that box for...
No.
I did it. Did I do it?
No. Last time I checked it, it wasn't there. Let me verify it now.
Okay. Golly, what a... You know what? I need to get somebody that actually knows what they're doing.
What's your live chat is not enabled. Yes, it's not enabled. So
all
do
right.
it.
This video is for underage kids. Okay, let me go ahead and jump right over there and do what I should have done last night. And, you know, this is what happens when you get too many things going on in your silly little life. I had two meetings last night at church that I had to attend. And Adam, you want to do a live stream on, what was that again that you wanted to do a live stream on? And I would have done it last night, but because I was off yesterday. But
no worries. I wanted to do a live stream on the history of the spread of Islam, the whole 1400 years.
Holy cow. That's a lot of years. All right. Well, We'll pick a night this week, and we'll do. I would love to do that. You know, I'm a history guy. That's what I love to do, and that would be a lot of fun because we all know that it spread through the transfusion of trade. I mean, they were trading.
Really?
I know this for sure because there were people that I'm certain I've read a hadith somewhere. I mean, a diet. No, it's true. And they were trading camel urine with people all the way across the North Coast.
Oh my God.
It's got to be in the history book someplace. You know it has to be there someplace. Okay, well, you know, we were supposed to start the show. What we're going to discuss tonight is miracles. We were going to discuss the miracles and compare and contrast those from the miracles that we find in the New Testament or in the Bible itself and the miracles that we find in the Quran or, more important, because there really isn't any miracles listed in the Quran conducted by Muhammad anyway, we would have to go to a hadith literature in order to find those miracles. But the gentleman that suggested that we do miracles is not with us right now. So we are going to have to mark him tardy, slap his wrist, send him to the principal, and have him put in school suspension for a week for doing this to us. But
amen.
Let's go ahead and bless that. But what we can do is we can start the show off with something that Adam has found out about his untimely death. Because if all everybody here knows that Adam died recently, and on his Facebook account, there is a memorial for him. And as we are all going there and eulogizing Adam on his Facebook account and his page and explaining what a bunch of complete dunces and dolts they are at the Facebook, what do they even call that? The something safety team or trust and safety team, whatever the heck that they're called. They're a bunch of idiots. You know, the thing is with Facebook, Facebook has to be, for as big as a corporation it is, they have to have the worst customer service ever. There is absolutely no way, there is very rarely are you able to communicate with a human being there, either whether it's through support messages or otherwise. You can't communicate with people. It's and if you think about how much money that corporation's worth, and the only saving grace about Facebook that I have found is that, well, Twitter, I know for sure that Twitter's lost 16% of its stock value in the last week. They've shed, I don't know how many, I think that comes out to about $7 billion they've lost. And Facebook has lost, I don't know, billions of dollars in stock value. So,
yeah, but. Well, real quick here, what you're forgetting on this, these guys all knew what they were going to do before they did it. Not only did they know they were gonna, what they were going to do before they did it, they also knew this was going to have a severe impact on their stock. I guarantee you, if you investigate these top-level people, including, you know, especially in the higher or middle management, okay, of Twitter and Facebook, I guarantee you they sold a bunch of stock short. You know what I mean?
Yes, for sure. They made a lot of money out of it.
Exactly. So the company might have suffered, but these reprobates, of course, they always profit. So it does. You know what I mean? But anyway, I'm sorry. Continue.
Well, you know, one of the things that I read an article. I don't know if it was this morning or it was yesterday. They kind of all kind of blend in, but the article discussed the shareholders of each of these corporations, Twitter and Facebook, actually having a class action lawsuit against the board of directors for purposely, knowingly sabotaging the platform by banning Trump, by banning, you know, doing what the both of the platforms did, knowing that it would cause an immediate and decimate the stock values. And that's what it's done. So this is something that they can actually sue the corporation for, or not just maybe the corporation, but the chairman of the board, for like Jack Dorsey. They can sue that guy for purposely and knowingly doing what he did. Let's just hope it works its way out. We'll see. Okay, Mr. Adam. Go ahead. Tell us.
Ray Navera. So imagine this guy finally admitting that he reported me and memorialized my account. So basically, somebody else with somebody else's name posted on the same group where Adam used to post his videos, which these idiots were not able to refute because their Allah is a sissy god. And their Muhammad is the most sissy prophet in the, not the sissy, he's the most pagan, non-prophet, pagan prophet in the history of the prophets. And this idiot, one of Asana's brother and Marshall's brother, did a fake death certificate because he's good with Photoshop probably, and sent it to Facebook. So, he cannot defend his sissy god, so he does that. That shows you how The poor Muslims try to stop the voice who is showing them the hypocrisy in their own stupid, idiotic religion.
it's ridiculous. And this is exactly what happens when people cannot refute the positions. They attack the person that dares to post them. This is why one of the persons that you just mentioned spends all of his time, is, you know, every waking moment in his mom's basement in his underwear eating potato chips, reporting people on Facebook, trying to get their accounts deleted on Facebook. So when you can't, when you cannot refute, you attack. And this is exactly a measure. When I've had all those the Facebook accounts that I've had them deleted and banned, I just wear it. I mean, you could Rad. I think Rad, you've had like 3 days out of Facebook jail in the last 6 months. Where is it? I mean, I'm serious. I mean,
yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, every time he turns around, he's getting banned for posts that he made back when Carter was president, for crying out loud.
Exactly.
It's crazy how simple it is to try to attack people's accounts. And this is what they do. When they cannot refute, they attack. And as I said, I wear it as a badge of honor that, you know, I've had, you know, so many accounts deleted. It's a pain in the butt. There's no doubt about it. But you keep backup accounts and you keep a list of your friends. And then as you keep a list of your friends, as soon as the one gets shut down, boom, you turn around and zip on off to the races with the other one. It's something that you shouldn't have to get used to. But this is.
But didn't this?
Unfortunately,
isn't this what Muhammad did all his life as well? Whoever spoke against him, he killed him, or got him killed. He didn't have to get his hands dirty. He had people to get these people killed. So they couldn't find me, so they killed me in Facebook. That's what they did. So they're like, the only thing that we can find is his account. So let's make him a dead person in the Facebook world. So imagine that. Like Muhammad did that. They are doing that. They are following their prophet 110%. And that just shows you the nature of this so-called cult. It's not even a religion. It's not a religion. It's a cult. Because the religion gives you the freedom to accept it or reject it. But when it comes to the cult, the satanic cult, this is what you do. Because you can see that in any cult.
Okay, when I heard that you had died on Facebook, and knowing it wasn't true, of course, I was thinking, you know, how clever is that? I mean, you have to be living in somebody's head rent-free if they're going to take the time to type up, create a death certificate. I mean, who thinks of these types of things, for crying out loud? Types up a death certificate and then gets you killed. I don't know. I mean, that's just, I don't want to say he's clever, but that is clever. I mean, that really is. He's acting like a complete and total and utter scumbag by doing it, because if you can't refute somebody, this is what he has to resort to. But I mean, to report somebody to Facebook and say they be dead.
Wow.
You got to think about the amount of work that you have to put into that and how much time you're spending in this guy's head. So I would say kudos, way to go. You know, if you're living in his head.
But Facebook, I mean, will not undo your account. I mean, what is their problem? They should have your IP address logged. You know what I mean? They know it's you. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I'm done with Facebook. As soon as I'm off this late ban, I'm going to give them a kiss off and then delete my account, dude. So just let you know. So
yeah, that's Facebook in itself. Like, imagine Facebook will accept somebody with the name Adam, last name Seeker, and they will take that death certificate. They will not slap the person on the face and say, "Are you an idiot? You are telling me that there is a real guy with that first name Adam, last name Seeker." No, they didn't do that. They're like, okay, we have that certificate. Let's just mark him dead. Like, they should actually ask me, hey, what is your real name? Give me your real ID and real name, because somebody said Adam Seeker is dead. But Facebook didn't do that. They're like, okay, Adam, first name Adam, last name Seeker is dead. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's like Eric Thekifer. They asked me, can you send your, a picture ID with your real name on there, Eric Thekifer? And I think, what type of morons are you people? I mean, it's like they got fifth graders running their trust and safety team because they're not able to recognize a name like Adam Seeker or a name like Radical Moderate or a name like Chris Claus or, well, maybe that is Chris's real name. I don't know. I haven't seen Chris's identification, so it's kind of hard to say on that. Okay. So, people, if you be dead, make another account so you live. and you can keep the game going. All right. So, I see our friend Issa. Issa, are you there? I only see some. What the heck is that? This looks like a
dancing lady.
That looks like a Buddha with a headdress or something on there. Issa, are you there, sir? I don't know. Maybe he's dead. Issa, did Ray Navarra get a hold of your Facebook account too and kill you? Okay. Well, we'll wait for him to get done eating or whatever he's doing right now. I saw this post over here in chat. After staging impressive rallies in the second half of 2020, stumbled to start off Twitter. This is typical. You know, banning the president of the United States from your platform had no bearing on your 16% drop in your stock price. Really?
Well, not only that. Oh wait,
it's in here.
Wait. Here's another funny thing. So after they've been banning and blocking everyone and not allowing anyone to post, I mean, if you typed out that you believe the election was stolen, okay, boom, you're done. Right. Okay. So get this, they're reporting triumphantly, you know, after Facebook banned everyone, you know, that believed the election was stolen, they've noticed that tweets and posts about the election being stolen has dropped by 70%. Yeah, because you got rid of 70% of the people. Not only that, okay, but you scared everybody else. Nobody wants to talk about it. That's not something triumphant. You know what right. I mean? You know what I'm saying?
And this is what we're talking about. This is a free speech issue. And the thing with Facebook, yep. Facebook is, I mean, they have, I don't know how much, well over a billion users worldwide. I mean, look at Adam. He's got six different accounts, so he counts for six different people. But, I mean, if you look at the number of people they have worldwide, they, you know, they're just huge. And they can't. Mm-hmm. When you start talking about the you know, banning just a few people here, they're going after specific people, and they have over a billion users. This is a free speech issue, and to ban people here in the United States for exercising their right to post speech that they disagree with, they should lose that. What is that? The 230, the laws number 230, USC 230 or whatever, that gives them special protection for as a platform, as long as they don't editorialize. Well, when they start editorializing, when they start repressing stories like, oh, I don't know, Hunter Biden's a computer, they no longer should have that protection under that provision of the law. But as you can see, they're worth so much money, they can pour all kinds of money into these campaign coffers of these politicians. The politicians just bend. The sad part about the thing about what I liked about Trump and what I still like about Trump is the man can't be bought. You cannot give that man enough money for a campaign donation to get him to do something to push your agenda through. He's already
working. That's why they hate him.
Yeah, they hate him because he cannot be bought. But you look at these other Dumbakins that have made their living, their life off of, oh, I don't know, getting your son to sit on some board of directors for an energy company in one of the most cricketed countries in the world and gets paid over $1 million. Things like that, you know, that really stand out. Anyway, Issa, are you going to come up on mic or what are we doing? Are we still?
Are we going to the miracles of Muhammad?
What's that?
Are we going to the miracles of Muhammad?
Yeah, we're going to get to the miracles of Muhammad, but I wanted to get Issa involved in this because this was his topic. This is what, because I asked him Sunday.
Oh.
Yeah, after we got off of the show on Sunday, he stuck around and because he's here for almost every show. And, you know, people that are here all the time, I want to give them, you know, some say so in what the topic is. So I just asked him if he would wanted to talk about something. And he said he wanted to talk to them about miracles. I'm like, okay. We'll talk about miracles. Come to the show. He comes to the show, but now he's not talking. I think maybe he feels like he's in the witness protection program over there. I don't know what he's doing. Okay, but I'll go ahead and start with the topic of miracles. And when, in order to define what I think the first, you know, when we say, okay, what are the miracles that that we find in the Bible? What are the miracles that we find in the Quran? Or what do we find? We should say, what are the miracles we find in the Christian faith, and what are the miracles that we find in the Islamic faith, more aptly? Because when we look in the Quran, I think the only one miracle that Muhammad is credited with, and I might be wrong on this, was splitting the moon. And even then, it's ambiguous about who actually split the moon.
No, Quran simply says the moon is split. It doesn't even say that the moon, Allah splitted the moon or Muhammad splitted the moon. And it says the moon is split and the day of judgment is near. Full stop.
So why say that Muhammad split the moon? Well, they have to have, they're desperate to have him provide some form of sign or of legitimacy for him being a prophet. So when we look at what a miracle is, a miracle is something that would be supernatural, a supernatural occurrence. And a supernatural occurrence would be something that would not be natural. I know that sounds kind of stupid, but when you think about it, it's true. If we look at what the laws of nature are, and you find something that violates those laws without some type of explanation, we would consider that a miracle. For an example, if I was to take this pen, and let go of it, and it suspended itself in midair, we would call that a miracle. Why? Because we know
that... call that magic.
Yeah. But we would say that that is a miracle because we know that gravity exists, and we know how gravity is created, and we know how it works. So when I let go of this pen, I am a prophet of Allah. Not so much. Why? Because I can't perform a miracle. And he could not perform a miracle. He could not provide a sign where he could cause or call upon Allah to cause a violation of the laws of nature, the laws that God created. But when we look in the Old Testament and we look in the New Testament, we see people using miracles as a form of verifying who they are and that they are indeed speaking on behalf of God, who controls these natural laws.
So may I show you what the Quran is saying about his miracles?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, let's just go to Quran while Isa tries to come back and speak. This is what Quran is saying. This is Surah, what happened? My computer is stuck? No, it's not. This is Surah number 21, ayah number 5. It says, but they say, the revelation is a mixture of false dreams. Rather, he has invented them. So people are saying, come on, dude, Muhammad, what are you doing? These are your dreams, your fable stories, and etc. What are you doing? We have already read these kind of stories. Ants speaking, flying carpet of Solomon, sun setting in the muddy water. These are all like fable stories. Come on, grow out of it. And they said, like, okay, if you want to show us, you are just a poet. So let us bring me a sign. Like the previous messengers were sent with miraculous signs. Okay, so that's what they are claiming. They're like, come on, bring me a sign. That's what people are saying to him. So first he said, wait, I'm going to give you the sign later. So Quran chapter number 10, verse number 20 came up. And it says, and they say, why is a sign not sent down to him from the Lord? So tell them, the unseen is for Allah. So wait, indeed, I am among you who waits. So Quran is saying to Muhammad to tell them, wait, I'm going to show you a sign later. Don't worry. Take a chill pill. I'm going to show you the sign later. But what happened is, right after that, Muhammad still couldn't do any miracle. So another verse came down. Quran chapter number 13, verse number 7. And it says, and those who believe, disbelieve, say to them, why has a sign not been sent down to him from his Lord? You are only a warner. And for every people is a guide. Like, okay, let me laugh on this a little, please. Like, look at the sequence. What is happening?
So when we look at, and here's the difference between, you know, when we look at the Quran and we look at what the people who are around, even the people who are around Muhammad were saying. So why is, you know, why isn't he performed a miracle if he's indeed supposed to be a prophet? Where is his sign? But when we look in the Bible, we find all kinds of signs being provided to people. I did a list. I did a search today. Listen, I did the search today, and I found a website that listed 124 separate miracles that we find in the Bible performed by prophets that, well, I would say all performed by prophets, but they were indeed miracles. If you look at, let's say, number one, of course, what's the number one miracle going to be? It's going to be the miracle of creation. So when you have the miracle of creation, who's performing the miracle? Well, God's performing the miracle. The Noahian deluge. I always love saying the Noahian deluge. The Noah's flood. Who's performing the miracle? God's performing the miracle. But when you get past that, when you get past that, and you get to, let's say, the 10 plagues of Egypt. Well, who performed those miracles? Well, God performs those miracles.
Using Moses.
God performs those miracles through Moses. So when we look at the water turning to blood, the frog plague, the lice plague, the flies, the killing of the cattle, We can bring you on, Chris. Just give me a minute here. Killing of the cattle, the hail and fire, the locust, the deep darkness, the death of all the firstborn. Those are all miracles performed by God through Moses. And why does God do this? Well, to show the legitimacy of Moses himself. So in order to show that Moses is indeed a prophet, you have to perform a sign. So when we talk about Muhammad not performing a miracle, not providing a sign, how are we supposed to know that he is a prophet? I don't think Chris is here. Where did he go? Let me bring this up. Okay, Isa.
Let me show you another verse. Finish this this verse's situation, because it's in a sequence. So let's bring the next verse. So now people are saying, you are only a warner. Show us something more. So Quran chapter number 29, verse number 50 come up. And it says, and now they are saying, now the people are saying, what do you mean by you are only a warner? What do you mean? Give us some sign. And then he said, why are the sign not sent down from his Lord? Now people are saying, why is Allah is not giving him a sign? And then say, the signs are only with Allah. I am only a clear warner. So now Muhammad actually have to say to them, hey, the miracles are with Allah. So only Allah can give the miracles. I am only a warner. But then things goes in a little tangent. When we look in chapter number 6, verse number 109. Now, here's another problem. Then the people started saying, we swear by your Allah, if you give me a sign, we will accept you. So they are still saying, come on, man. We agree, we will give you a sign. Then he says, the sign is only with Allah, and what will make you perceive that even if it come, they would believe. Now he is now justifying himself by the verse that he said that Jibreel gave to him, that these people are saying that they swear by Allah that if you give us the sign, they will convert, but they will still not convert. How do you know that they will convert? You see the language of the Quran? Like, do you see the language of Quran? And what will make you perceive that even if it, like a sign, has come, they would not still disbelieve? Imagine that. Like, he had to go in lens. This is the seventh verse, sixth verse that I'm showing. Now look what happened. This is still not enough. We will go to 1751. Now this ends the whole dilemma. And nothing has prevented us from sending the sign. Allah is saying, oh, we could send you the sign, O Muhammad. Except that the former people denied them. And we gave Thumud, the she camel, as a visible sign. But they wronged her. And we sent not the sign except a warning now. So imagine if the people didn't even accept it. let's assume people didn't accept it. Yes, some people would not accept, fine. But there are many people who accept it. But imagine now, you don't even have a sign, and you are saying that because some people did not accept the signs, that is why I'm not going to give you the sign, O Muhammad. Yeah, what kind of a God is he now?
Well, this is why this whole thing with him being a prophet is a joke, and to try to reason. And this is, and I was thinking about this yesterday, when you go back and forth with people, and I was thinking about this. You know, how do you rationalize with people who believe some of these things that are so patently false, demonstrably false? How can you carry on a rational conversation, a reasonable conversation, with somebody that believes these things? And it occurred to me, and I've said this several times before on the show, and I've said this several times in groups on Facebook and in other places, that you have to have some type of spiritual blindness. I mean, there has to be something that completely blinds people to things. You know, and this is just one example of it. And we appreciate you presenting that, Adam. But this is just one example of it. You know, if you're saying, well, if you just perform a sign for us, if you're truly a prophet and God wants people to believe in him, why isn't, and you claim to be that prophet of that God, why isn't he giving you a sign? And you can't see that this guy is a patently obvious false prophet. You're blind. You are spiritually blind. You are blinded to the point where you will believe something that is completely antithetical to what is obvious to everybody else. And that is this. You know, I don't know how many different verses that we've shown here on this show where we've clearly demonstrated that the Quran is full of stories that pre-exist the Quran, that the Quran has that the Quran is full of all kinds of anachronisms. He has people, he has a Samaritan, a people group that did not come into existence until around 700 BC. He has them at Mount Sinai at an event in 1400 BC, over 500 years.
And David having chainmail.
And what?
David having chainmail.
Selling Joseph into slavery for coins, for dinar, whatever the heck the currency is. But he wasn't sold into slavery for coins. He was sold into slavery for shekels, which is a measured weight of coinage. You have crucifixion occurring in the court of Pharaoh. You have all these problems in the Quran. But yet these people, and I honestly, and this is why I do pray. I mean, I do pray for them. They have a spiritual blindness, a blindness that only the Spirit of God can remove. And so when we sit here and we bang on this every single night and start saying, look, how can you believe this? How can you believe that a prophet quotes Jesus, I mean, this is 600 years after the life of Jesus, quotes Jesus saying that there is going to be another prophet that comes after me, and you'll never guess who it is. It's me. That's what he says. And people don't see that, and people still believe it. How can you believe such a thing? What were you going to add there, Adam? Go ahead.
I'm going to add this miracle, because that's the top-notch miracle that people, Muslims, go to. This is the miracle of Mi'raj Sharif. Okay? So now look at this miracle. Nobody gives you the whole hadith. This is the whole hadith. This is in Sahih al-Bukhari, beginning of the creation, hadith number 3207. Now look what is happening. Prophet said, while I was at the house in a state midway between sleep and wakefulness, as the man laying between two men, a golden tray full of wisdom and belief was brought to me. So a golden tray full of wisdom Okay, no. Sorry, I'm laughing. Sorry. And my body was cut open from the throat to the lower part of the abdomen. So from the neck to up to the testicles, his chest was cut open. Eric, are you looking at the beautiful hadith? This is the hadith of Mi'raj. And then the abdomen was washed. Then my abdomen was washed with the Zamzam water. And my heart was filled with wisdom and belief. So if, man, seriously, like this is, if you have to believe these kind of miracles, you have to be like really, really, really crazy. That's all I can say.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There has to be some form of spiritual blindness going on here, if you're going to believe something like that.
So if they say the golden tray full of wisdom and belief was actually metaphorical, okay, it can be metaphorical, even though that it's not. He is looking at a golden tray. His chest is cut open all the way down till his testicles. And then Zamzam is the well in Makkah. So how can that be metaphorical? You know, if you are using a metaphorical thing, you have to wash with some metaphorical water. You can say water from the heavens. That would make the whole thing metaphorical. But now his body is physical. His body has been cut open, and his abdomen and his heart is cleansed with so-called Zamzam water, and then filled with wisdom and belief, which came in a golden tray. Do you see how it is happening?
Yeah, one part of it is supposed to be taken metaphorically, and the other part is supposed to be taken literal, and you're trying to combine the two, and it doesn't work out. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. In a single sentence, they have to be all metaphorical, or they have to be all physical. Then Al-Burak. Burak came, a white animal smaller than a mule and bigger than a donkey, which has wings basically, was brought to me, and I sat out with Jibreel. Yeah, somebody's saying something?
Let me mute it. It sounds like Issa's on the phone with somebody. I tried to unmute him, but that's okay. Keep going. Go ahead.
You are not showing my screen anymore.
Oh, sorry. Ba-boom. There we go.
Okay. So, now Isa is not mute.
Isa, you need to mute your mic if you're not going to be up on mic, buddy.
Okay.
There we go.
When I reached the nearest heaven, so the first heaven, so Allah has seven heavens. So the first heaven Muhammad reached in the Burak, the flying donkey slash mule kind of a thing. Jibreel said to the heaven gatekeeper. So the heavens has gate and they have gatekeepers. Open the gate. The gatekeeper asked, who is it? So the heavens gatekeeper, which also should be an angel, he doesn't know who is coming. He has to ask, who is it, guys? Who knocked at the door? And he said, I am Jibreel. The gatekeeper said, who is accompanying you? The Jibreel said, it's Muhammad. The gatekeeper said, has he been called? The gatekeeper said, yes. Then it was said, he is welcome. What a wonderful visit his is. So in the first heaven, I met Adam and greeted him. And he said, you are welcome, O son and a prophet. Then we ascended to the second heaven. It was asked again, who is it? Jibreel said, Jibreel. It was said, who is with you? He said, Muhammad. It was asked, has he been sent for you? And he said, yes, it was said, he is welcome. What a wonderful wizard he is. Then I met Jesus and Yahya, who is actually John the Baptist, who said, "You are welcome, O brother and a prophet." Then we ascended to the third heaven. It was again asked, all the gibberish thing. He welcomed. And then there I met Joseph and greeted him and replied, "You are welcome, O brother." So Joseph is on a higher level than Jesus and John the Baptist.
Which then Joseph is this Joseph from Egypt and Abraham's great-grandson, or Joseph,
yes,
father of Jesus?
Not the father of Jesus. This is the Quran is always talking. Father of Jesus in Quran is Amran, not Joseph. So the wife of Amran gave the son whose name gave wife of Amran bore Maryam. So
Jesus would be the grandson of Imran. It doesn't mention Joseph's father. Okay, so
no.
All right, I just want to figure out, yes, which one it was. Okay.
"You are welcome, O brother," etc., etc. Then we went to the fifth heaven. Again, some questions were asked. We exchanged, etc., etc. I met great Aaron. So now Aaron, the Moses' son, who said, "You are welcome, my brother." Then we ascended to the sixth heaven. Again, same questions, etc., etc., etc. Then I greeted Moses. So Moses is on the sixth heaven. Aaron is on lesser heaven. "You are welcome, O brother, a prophet." When I proceeded on, he started weeping on being asked why he was weeping. He said, "O Lord, followers of this youth who has sent after me will enter paradise in great number than my followers." Then we ascended to the seventh heaven. And again, the same question was asked, exchanged. Then I met and greeted Abraham. So Abraham is on the seventh heaven. Imagine, he's like the top-notch heaven is the seventh heaven. So Abraham is on the top-notch heaven. "You are welcome, O son and the prophet." Then I was shown Al-Baytul Ma'mur, i.e. Allah's house. I asked Jibreel about it. He said, "This is Baytul Ma'mur, where 70,000 angels perform prayers daily. And when they," I don't know why Muhammad has the issue with 70. Everything is 70, 70, 70, 70,000, 70, 100,000, whatever. "They never return to it, but always a fresh batch comes to it daily." So daily fresh angels come, start offering prayer. "Then I was shown Sitaratul Muntaha. It is a tree in the seventh heaven, and I saw it is Nabak's fruit, which resembles the clay jug of Hajar, town in Arabia. And its leaves were like the ears of elephant." Imagine the tree. It has hanging jugs kind of fruit and leaves like elephant ears. "Four rivers originate at its root. Two of them were apparent and two were hidden." By the way, here Muhammad is trying to define the four rivers in Jannah, because Adam was in Jannah. It was never in the earth. So Adam was in Jannah. So now he's trying to define these trees, these rivers of Jannah. By the way, one of the rivers' name is Nile as well, which is another problem. Anyhow, I asked Jibreel about those rivers, and he said, "The two hidden rivers are in paradise, and the apparent ones are the Nile and the Euphrates." So these are the two rivers flowing from the Jannah, from the seventh heaven, into the earth.
Now, is this okay? So let's just cut to the chase on this supposed miracle here. This is the one where, okay, it says that Allah proposes 50 prayers, and then he goes down and he finds Moses, and Moses says, "You can't have that many, knock it down." So he goes back up, gets it down to 40, gets it down to 30, and then he eventually gets. Is this the same hadith that does,
yeah,
that?
Yeah. After that, it will come to the prayers, yeah, and etc. Okay. etc. Yeah. So this is the talk.
This is nothing more than a ripoff of what
Abraham talk of prayed. Abraham and
yeah,
the Abraham,
Luke, yeah. Yeah, he's praying for Lot and the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah in that story that we find in Genesis. This is nothing more. And this is a ripoff. We find these ripoffs not only in the Hadith, of course, you know, which is, you know, patently obvious here, but we also find them all over the Quran when we start looking at all of these, you know, the Talmudic stories, you find Midrash stories, you have stories from Gnostic God. I mean, Jesus speaking from the cradle. We know where that story came from. It came from the infancy gospel of Thomas. We know that it was a Gnostic story. The problem is Muhammad didn't know that. Muhammad was illiterate. I think the funniest line about that, or the analogy of that, is Muhammad wouldn't know the difference between a canonical book of the Bible or the New York phone book. He just wouldn't know that because he's illiterate. So when we look at these miracles that we find in the Quran versus what we find in the Bible, two different types of miracles, two different types of purposes. I want to get Issa on here, if he could ever come up on mic, because we wanted to discuss this tonight. It says, I cannot unmute my guest. Well, can I ask him or ban him from the studio? I mean, what the heck am I paying for a subscription for here if I can't perform these functions? Issa, there you are. Okay, so he's unmuted himself.
Yeah, here I am.
I don't see his face. Oh, there is his face. What's the deal tonight, dude? You okay?
Oh, I'm good. Okay. I was having actually a class. I'm taking a break from class. This is an interesting conversation.
No, I can see you. Go ahead.
Keeping up, or can you hear me? I don't know.
No, we can hear you fine. We can hear you just fine.
Okay.
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this is an intense conversation. I don't know. I try to give benefit of the doubt. I don't know if I would call the things ripoffs. I think you have spiritual stories and continuums, and the stories can change throughout the time. One story can become 10,000 stories. Do we know what the original story was? I don't know. I'm not sure we can figure that out. I do think stories, like, take the story of Heracles. You have the Greek narrative of Heracles, and then you get the Roman narrative of Hercules. They do vary somewhat, but, you know, the Roman interpretation of the Greek tradition varies somewhat. Is there a true story or a false story? I don't know. I guess what I would be interested in is what is out of the story. And Adam was addressing the concept of, is it all metaphorical or is it all literal? I don't know. When I think of spiritual narrative, Heil's Geschichte, the sacred history, the salvation history, I'm not implementing logic and rationality to it. I think it functions on a different level. We're dealing with higher end concepts. So I don't know if that's even a really helpful way to engage the spiritual narrative, is to go by looking and saying, did this literally happen? I mean, I don't think so. I don't think it fits into that kind of thing. Like the story, I think we're reading the story about the bile being cut out and out of the chest. I don't know. The way that I hear that, it's like when I think of the 12 apostles, I see numerology, I see gematria, I see a spiritual narrative. I don't see literal 12 people. That's just from where I'm coming from as a person who, from my research into religion and spirituality, that's kind of what I see. But I could be wrong. That's just where I'm coming from. This is from what I see at this moment in time.
Okay, so when we look, when we tried to compare the history of the New Testament, history of the Bible, we have data points that we can point to and say, okay, well, this is not metaphorical. This is being treated as an actual historical event. This is being treated as an actual historical person, place. And then when you compare that to the Quran, and they start saying, well, you have this man, Muhammad, and he's from the city of Mecca, and he lived at such and such a time. Well, we don't have those data points. We do not have the evidences to even begin with, did he perform a miracle? Was he able to perform a miracle? When you can't even demonstrate that this place existed, that they're talking about, something that clearly is not supposed to be taken metaphorical, it's to be taken as a historical fact. And when you can't even demonstrate something as simple as that, then it's going to be problematic. But when I thought what you wanted to talk about is maybe compare and contrast the miracles that we find Muhammad performing and juxtapose those against what we find in the Bible and maybe the miracles that Christ performed.
We
when we start asking, why did Christ perform miracles? I mean, what's the purpose of performing miracles. Are you there?
Well, and I think that's an interesting question. Yeah, I'm here. I don't know. My feedback is really bad or not. I can't
your
tell.
Your internet like it's sucks.
Sort of cutting
it does.
Out.
Yeah, your internet does suck. I'm just going to tell you that right now. Why don't you try this? Why don't you try cutting the video, your video, and then just use audio? Maybe that'll cut down the amount of data being pushed through that narrow bandwidth there. But we can still hear you, correct?
Yeah, I'm using my phone. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, we can hear you. Yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear me? I don't even
yes,
know.
We can hear you.
I'm using my fully Y. I tried cutting, closing all the ads. Duh. Okay, cool. These are interesting questions. How do these miracles compare and contrast from each other? It's interesting that I would say that some certain Muslims will argue that he didn't perform any miracles. The Prophet of Islam performed no miracles, but you do see things like you could argue these as miracles, at like the Barak that goes up into the sky, into the heavens, as well as what Adam had brought up about the bile being removed. And then you have the cave miracle where there's the spider web and the bird that's there. So, I mean, there are multiple things that, and there's the story I had talked about last time about where the man came and tried to attack him and he was paralyzed. And you have the Battle of Badr where the angels came and defeated, you know, the army. So, I mean, these, you know, defeated the Middle Eastern opposition. So you do have those kinds of things. And then I think within the what we see in the Evangelion, you have the narrative, like you have the pigs that the demons go into, and then they jump off the cliff, and you have the miracle. A lot of like, I would say what I would call doctor miracles, where the Christ goes and he heals all these people from blindness, from even death, Lazarus from death, leprosy, all these kinds of issues. So I would say they are different kinds of miracles. You don't really see, I don't know if there's the same kind of, you see the Christ figure more as a physician. The other miracles, I don't know if archetypally, I would say that they are kind of different figures in these situations.
Well, when you're controlling nature, you're calming a storm. I mean, that's not.
And you also have resurrection, too.
That's got to be a different one. That's in a, you know, you mentioned the swine.
May I? Sorry.
You have the storm and resurrection.
The casting of the demons into the swine. They didn't jump off a cliff. If you go to the site that it is believed that this miracle happened, there's kind of a plateau. And then there's this really steep embankment that leads directly into the Sea of Galilee. So, they ran down. They didn't, you know, do a Harry Carry or a Geronimo off of a cliff. It was running into the sea. And if you notice, Christ is the one that cast them, the demons into the swine. So when you start talking about that type of miracle, the miracles that Christ performs are for a purpose, to demonstrate that he is indeed a prophet. But when we look at the miracles that Muhammad performed, there's really no witnesses, and you can't prove by any metric that they were miracles.
Isa, let me go back. I think you missed the earlier part where I've shown 6-7 verses of Quran, which clearly defines that Muhammad was given no miracle whatsoever. Okay. And there are even more verses. Like there are 9 different verses. I've shown like 6 or 7 of them. Then you see certain ahadith where he is extraordinarily exalted. Okay. And in that exaltment, extraordinary exaltment, they have destroyed the actual narrative, because those extraordinary exaltments do not actually reconcile with any logical brain, even for that time as well. Secondly, you brought up the miracle of spider. You know, that's another problem. In the Jewish tradition, there is another book called Legends of David. This is a book. I'm showing my screen. Can you please show my screen, Mr. Eric Smith? This is an apocrypha writing as well. It's a story writing. Legend of Jews. And this is, let me just zoom in a little. Okay. You can actually find that. So David once said to God that, let me just go to the exact place. On another occasion, David expressed his doubt of God's wisdom in having formed such apparent useless creature as spiders. They do nothing but spin a web that has no value. He was to have striking proof that even a spider web may serve as an important purpose. On one occasion, he had taken refuge in a cave. Now, he did took a refuge in a cave, but you know, now the exaltment comes here in the apocrypha account. And Saul and his attendants in the pursuit of him were about to enter and seek there, but God sent a spider to weave a web across the opening, and Saul told his men to desist from the fruitless search in the cave, for the spider web was undeniably proof that no one had passed through in its entrance. Do you see the same story?
Okay.
In Muhammad's time, like, this is an apocrypha account. This is not Bible. Like,
okay. Adam, where do we find this in the Quran?
We do not find this in Quran. We could find this in Hadith and the Seerah, that Muhammad was migrating from Mecca to Medina, Mecca to Taif, I think. I don't know which migration this happened. I forgot that. But he left Ali sleeping in his bed, and he, in the darkness of the night, he ran. And some people tried to follow him. He was in the cave with Abu Bakr or Umar, I forgot once again. And the spider put the web in front of the cave. The same story is okay. As is. And some people came
to the... What they're doing is they're changing it from David to Muhammad.
Yeah, some people came and they said, okay, no, the cave has spider web in front of it. So it means that nobody's inside. So the same, this legendary story, which is not a true story, it's a legend of Jews, chapter number four and onward. Like, this is the same story that you see in the legendary books, which were the oral stories of the mouth at that time as well. So, you know, every mythical story that you will find in the Ahadith for the miracle of Muhammad, you will find some correlation to the mythical stories, not the true ones. Because the true ones, Muhammad couldn't do anyways. You know, Muhammad couldn't do the true story. So, like, you will find these kind of left-right stories, which you will find only in the mythical books, the apocrypha writing. So, because he brought up the spider web, so I wanted to show you that where you can find the spider web as well.
I wanted to ask Issa a question. If Issa, do you have a comment on that? Did you wanted to interject something about that? Because I do have a question for you. Issa, are you still there?
It was Issa's topic today, and he's very quiet.
He's here. Go ahead. Issa, are you back in class or something, or what?
Okay. Yeah, so... No, my attorney turned off my mic. My phone is really glitchy. Sorry. I'm going to get a newer phone. Hopefully, we'll solve this for the future. The situation... So I wanted to, the thing is, address that is, I wouldn't say it's false. I think that this is my problem. This is a logical fallacy. You're making this dynamic of it has to be A or B. I don't think it's that way. I think that that's a false equivalency. We actually don't know what the truth is in this situation. Nobody really does. That's why I would say it's a spiritual narrative. That's the argument that I would make towards it, as opposed to this is a narrative that beyond a doubt we can.
Okay, so you're basically saying it's a miracle, but you're giving it a different nomenclature. Is that am I getting this right, Issa?
Yeah, The thing is, I would say, well, we take the story of Noah's Ark, the prophet, or, you know, some might call the prophet, some say he's a holy guy, depends on what narrative you use, or the best person of the time. The narrative with of Ark and all the world being flooded differs. Like, you could take the Gilgamesh story of what is his name? You see stories that are very similar to each other. Does that mean that that story is false? I wouldn't say that it does. You know, I think you have these flood narratives that exist. I don't think because there's another flood narrative that predates this flood narrative that means that this flood narrative is false. That's what I would say.
Before you go on, Gilgamesh does not predate the flood narrative. There is there's a stone that they found. I'd have to look it up, but I'll bring it up. That is more closely related to the story that we find in the Bible, the Noah's flood, than we do of the Gilgamesh story. It's more closely related to the biblical story. So I understand. You're just making, you know, trying to draw an analogy here of what, you know, what one is, what a spiritual analogy would be, or is a spiritual application versus a literal application. I get that. But my question is, do you believe that miracles occur today?
Sure.
Okay. So why would it be?
I am not a master.
You're not a what? I didn't hear.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. I didn't hear you.
Oh, sorry about this. I'm not an expert or a master, but I would say that I wouldn't be against that type of construct. I you know, the thing is, some people say, you know, it doesn't exist. It's not real. Other people say it is real, and I would never take that away from someone that's real. Like, some people have had miraculous healings from cancer and stuff like that. You know, they go through all the procedures, they go through all the chemotherapy and stuff, and they do prayer and stuff like that, and they're healed from it. You know, they're healed, they have a miraculous healing. Would I say I wouldn't? Maybe. I always think that you want to be skeptical and apply skepticism and try to rule out everything else. But, you know, I wouldn't rule that out.
Okay, so you wouldn't rule out miracles, God intervening and interacting in people's lives today, performing miracles to demonstrate or to strengthen somebody's faith?
Sure. Okay. Exactly. I would never do that. I don't think that that's my place to do that. I think that, yeah.
Yeah, because what we did earlier, I don't know if you were here, but what I wanted to do is I wanted to define what a miracle was, so we both could agree on what a miracle was, and then look at a list of examples that occur today. I mean, if we look at, and the reason why I say that is because I spent a good deal of money for this two-volume set here, written by Craig Keener, and what he does in this two-volume set, this is well over, you know, 2,000 pages of documented miracles that people have testified about, contemporaneously, by the way, where, you know, like you said, in one day there's cancer there, person's prayed over in church, the next day he goes back to the oncologist, and the cancer's gone. In all kinds of different ailments, as far as, you know, the body is concerned, where they pray over the person in the church and the ailment is cured. So I would submit that miracles do happen today. And one of the people that uses a really good argument for the supernatural occurring is a guy by the name of Gary Habermas. Have you ever heard of this guy before? Esau,
I have
up again. Okay, and he uses NDEs, near-death experiences, uses the thousands of documented instances where people have had these near-death experiences. And of course, there's always going to have a percentage that are going to say, "Oh, well, I saw this blinding light, and you know, I went and I saw God, and I saw my friends," and that. You're going to have people that are going to do that, sure. But he also provides in this list, in one of his books, where he talks about near-death experiences, how people would know certain things or have saw certain things in their experience that there's no way that they could have if they did not experience some sort of supernatural out-of-body observation. And one of the best ones that he uses is that I believe it was a lady, she's being operated on. She has a near-death experience. She's looking down on her body, but she's looking at the top of the, there's like a light or something that's above her where the doctors are operating on her. So she dies and she comes back to life or whatever. And she's able to recite the serial number from that light. She said she had OCD, and whenever she says stuff like that, she tends to do those type of things. Well, the question then becomes is how can she know that serial number unless she had some type of near-death experience? And they have all kinds of other ones. One of the best ones is that there was a shoe on top of the roof of the hospital where the guy has this experience. He has this out-of-body experience that he floats up out of the room, out of the top of the hospital on his way up to the blinding light. They're usually the same. They have the same, you know, light, love, warmth, all these things. But he says that on his way up, there's the shoe sitting on the roof of the hospital. It's a green shoe or some off-color shoe. And so he tells the nurse this, and the nurse goes up on the roof of the hospital, and sure enough, there's that green shoe. So when we start talking about, do miracles occur today? I think they most certainly do, and there's all kinds of evidence for them occurring. But what we're looking at here is we're trying to compare apples and oranges. We're looking at, you know, do these miracles that occur in the Quran, do they occur for a purpose? Do they serve a purpose in order to glorify God? And that's the purpose of these miracles, is to glorify God or to bring some type of credibility to his prophets. So when you have Muhammad in the Hadith, because there's nothing, Adam pointed out very, very succinctly that there's nothing in the Quran that shows Muhammad's performing any type of miracle at all. There's nothing there. They're all in the Hadith, and Hadith literature is written down when? When is the Hadith literature written down? It's written down 200 years later, and it's via oral tradition, and it's given all kinds of rooms for embellishment. Any thoughts on anything that I just said? Isa?
I'm sorry. Yes. Hello?
You sound distracted tonight. Hello? Yes. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Isa?
No, well, yeah, it's my phone is really the internet. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Well, we can hear you.
The connection is really bad on my phone. Hello?
Yes. Hello? Hello? Hello?
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. Yeah, the connection. Yeah, the connection's quite bad, but I hear exactly everything you're saying. I think it's hard. Is the Quran the only element for the Islamic tradition? I don't know. I wouldn't take the other traditions, even if they're later iterations, to not be a part of that continuum of the tradition. I think that because like that's what it means. All of those things are important for the Muslim. All those elements are important for the Muslim. Like Adam was talking about the Mishkat. Like all these things are very, very important. So I think it's all a part of one continuum for the Muslim. This narrative, and I think of the walls of Jericho when. I don't know if they were shofars, but the trumpets blew,
and the walls came down, and that was kind of seen as a victory. And that could be similar to what you would see with the Battle of Badr, I guess, you know, this type of thing where this small group of people, you know, triumph, you know, is able to overcome these great odds. Is that not a miracle of the people? And then also I would think of the prophet Elijah with the prophets of Baal, you know, where he defeats the prophets of Baal. And I think that's, I don't know. I mean, I would say that that could be seen as sort of equitable, you know.
Isa, I have a huge issue over here, what you are saying. Mm-hmm. In terms of, let me be very clear. The issue is that any hadith that I will present, and it kind of slightly goes a little bit away from the Quranic narrative, 99% of scholars will throw it into the dump and say it is against Quran, hence it's daif, it's wrong, even though if it is mentioned as sahih. The problem with the miracle narrative is that you have Quran saying 9 times that Allah saying, I have not given you any miracle, 9 times. Yet you will find these miracles in the ahadith literature, which 100% of the Muslims scholars will say this is exactly how it happens. Point number one. Point number two, you brought up that the ahadith literature is a very important aspect of Islamic tradition. I 100% agree with you. But in this traditional aspect, most of the Muslims do not accept the ahadith. Even now in the 20th century, the problem is most of the Muslims are rejecting the sahih hadiths because it goes against the moral literature. You can actually look at those hadiths, for example, the monkey beating the she monkey because she was involved an immoral sexual activity with other monkeys. Like this is one of the hadiths. Like they are rejected. How can you reject a sahih hadith? But this hadith has nothing to do with Quran, so it cannot be against Quran. But it is like, it's so silly and stupid that they have to reject it. For example, Muhammad riding a donkey and the guy sitting behind him, he said, where does the sun set? He said, it sets in the muddy water or muddy pool. And Quran actually says that as well, but they have to reject it because it sounds so stupid, even though it is sahih. Now, the problem is, that's exactly what I'm saying. Even Quran by itself is not preserved. You know that very well because you are a student of history and all that. So Quran is even not preserved. There are issues in Quran, and you know that very well as well. Now, how do we reconcile all of these things when you are talking about the miracles of Muhammad? You know, that's the basic essence of the question.
I just want to speak for Isa here for just a second. I think what he does is he...
If I don't mind, I would like Isa to give the answer, if you don't mind me, because I really want him to provide...
Well, I know exactly how he does it, but go ahead, Isa. Isa. Can you hear me, Isa? Oh, there we go. All right, so he is coming in.
Let's see.
Okay, we can see you.
Okay, I'm leaving.
Okay, I'm going to delete. I'm going to remove this other one.
All right, great.
There we go.
Can you hear me now better?
We can hear you loud and clear.
Great. See, the computer's much better. So what were I missed the last thing you said. You were saying you were going to say my position on the matter, or
well, I know how you spiritualize it, but go ahead. Adam wants to hear your answer.
Yeah, I guess that is definitely my focus. Okay, I'm glad this works a lot better. Could you say the question one more time, Adam? I'm sorry that the phone was just lagging.
Okay. So let me repeat it. I took like literally three minutes to ask you the question. So basically, when you talk about the ahadith literature, The problem is that anything that goes against Quran, 99% of the scholars rejects it, even though when it is Sahih, they reject it. But the miracles of Muhammad in all the Hadith literature goes 100% against Quran, yet they do not reject it. That's point number one. With what you said earlier, just to correlate to it, that Hadith literature and the Quran literature are all very important and they go side by side for all the Muslims, I 100% agree with you. But at the same time, there are so many Hadith literature which does not go against Quran, yet they proclaim it as wrong or fake, even though that they are calculated as or testified as Sahih. For example, stoning of the she monkey who did illegal intercourse with another monkey. For example, I think I gave another example of Muhammad sitting on a donkey with another guy saying where the sun sets, and he said it sets in the muddy pool of water. But like, these goes against logic and science. So they, in the 20th century, they are proclaiming it da'if, or which is not da'if, it is sahih, and everything is with the chain of narration and anything. Yet they are rejecting these kind of things, but accepting these kind of things, which even go against Quran because they proclaim their prophet to be on a higher level. How do you reconcile that when you even know that Quran is not even preserved? And you do know that because you are a student of comparative study and history. So how do you reconcile all of this?
Yeah, it's a very heavy duty question. So I've actually had this discussion before about, you know, is the hadith preserved? The only real argument you can make on the preservation of ahadith is that the construct of silsila, or chains of narration. And that's what makes a hadith weak or strong, is how many narrators there are. Are they reliable? It's not the veracity of information, because we can't prove the veracity of information. So no scholar really can engage that. We don't know if the veracity of the information of this, of any of this is, you know, 100%. That's a very difficult thing if we're using complete historical understanding. I think it's hard with any reading of any text. Is there a correct reading of the text? That to me is a difficult path to walk down. We could use things. So something I used to do when I was younger, which was really fun, was I would buy concordances. I would buy, you know, like these big books where you would find the word and you could find what the etymology of the word were, like in spiritual texts. Like, that was something that was really fun for me. So, I mean, you would have to do some kind of exegesis. That's like the only real way. Like, maybe you can get a stronger narrative. I don't know if you can get 100% narrative. I don't know if we can get 100% truth on anything. Maybe something more true. Can we reconcile these situations where the Quran says something and the Ahadith says something different? Well, there's several paths we can take. One path could be that we take the path of saying, well, the Quran is all metaphorical. Of course, there are people like, you'll take the Salafis and the Wahhabis who are going to say, no, it's all literal. It's, you know, like you'll take Ibn Kathir, the Kursi, the throne is the throne. You'll have these groups. You have like the very literalist camp, which says all of it's literal. There was actually a group called the Mutazilites, which were ultra rationalists, and they said, well, everything has to fit into scientific theory. That kind of perspective has kind of died out. We don't really see the Mutazilites anymore as a strong perspective, you know. But that was, I would say, the early dynasties, that narrative, that perspective was taken. So how we read there's like 30,000 hadith, you know, there's so many of them. I agree.
30,000 is just for... Yeah, okay, let's go. Carry on, please.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I agree with you that that the type of way of processing hadith is not a very strong science. I agree with you on that. I don't think chain of narration gives you veracity of information. I think they're two complete ways of legitimacy. And people saying da'if does not mean the information is weak. It just means that the chain is weak, which doesn't really tell us anything.
Correct.
So I agree with that. It's
so
really...
now, how do you reconcile? Now, mm-hmm. let me move you back, because how do you reconcile that even though that Quran is saying that we have not given you any miracle. And over here in this particular aspect, they are very, very clear. They are very, very clear because it's not just one verse. Like I've shown, if you want, I can go back and show you all the verses again. I've shown six verses, and Quran is explicitly saying, because Jews are asking them, Christians are asking them, the pagans are asking Muhammad, show us a sign and we will accept what your religion is. We'll accept you as a prophet. So now it is clearly written, Muhammad, we are not giving you any miracle. Muhammad, we are not giving any miracle. And not just one location, multiple locations. Now, when this is happening, Muhammad could simply say, hey, look, I splitted the moon. Hey, look, look at the Badr. We were 313 and they were 1,000. We still won. Imagine, look at that. This is my miracle. Allah sent the angels to protect it. 1,000 angels came down to protect us. And this is not just Makkan verses. I'm showing you the Medinan verses, the later verses as well. So in all of his life, 9 different locations in Quran, it was 100% clear Muhammad was given no miracle. Yet these Hadith literature and the Seerah literature gives us some kind of miracles for Muhammad. How do you reconcile? How do you actually claim that they are authentic when within his life, if so-called Quran verses are preserved, so-called, it completely denies all of these miracles?
Yeah, that's a heavy question. I know exactly what you're saying. Basically, if I'm going to reframe what you're saying, look, the Quran says there's no miracles. Whether the Hadith and these other alternative texts, these extra texts, which are important spiritual texts, say they're miracles, it doesn't really matter because the Quran says that there are no miracles. Is that fair? Is that what you're saying? I just want to make sure I'm recapping what you're saying.
In a way, yes.
Okay. So I think the question then would arise, what does the Quran mean by miracles? What does a sign and a miracle mean in the context of the Quran versus what we see in the Hadith? Is that the same thing? So the problem I think that we have.
Okay, for that, I will give you the answer for that before you go into any further. Read Quran chapter number 6, verse number 114. Eric, can you please show it on the screen as well, brother?
Give me a second. Let me pull it up.
Yes, 6:114. Isa, can you kindly read? Because you might be able to read pretty faster before the Eric could show.
Hey, no. Hey, Alan, I'm good at this. Hold on a second. It's there we go.
Okay. What does it say?
Says, then it is other than Allah I should seek as a judge, while it is He who has revealed to you the book explained in detail. Really? And those whom we previously gave this scripture know that it is sent down from your Lord, so never be among the doubters.
Perfect. So, Isa, you are doubting. Number one, Quran chapter number 10, verse number 37. Please open that.
10 what?
10:37. So right now, if you doubt the Quran, then you are doubting the Quran because it is a clear explanation of each and everything. That's what it says. Read this.
And it was not possible for this Quran to be produced by other than Allah, but it is a confirmation of what was before it and the detailed explanation of the former scripture about which there is no doubt.
Once again,
the Lord of the world.
It clearly defines when people are asking that the former prophets were given miracles, Muhammad, why were you not given miracle? Show us a miracle and we will accept you. So here it is a detailed explanation. Quran is a detailed explanation explaining the former scriptures as well, showing you that it is a detailed explanation. So when the former prophet is mentioned in the Quran verse chapter number 17, it is all about the miracle which were given to the former prophets as well. Just like this verse, Quran chapter number 10, verse number 37 is explaining. So previous verse 6:114 is saying, do not be the doubters. This one is saying reference to the previous scripture. Now show chapter number 12, verse number 111.
111?
Yes, sir.
That's like the last verse of the chapter. Look at that. All right. There was certainly in the stories a lesson for those of understanding. Never was the Quran a narration invented, but a confirmation of what was before it and a detailed explanation of all things and guidance and mercy for all people who believe.
All right. Once again, we see a confirmation of the previous scriptures, and we see Quran being a detailed explanation. Now, when we see Quran chapter number 6, verse number 109, Quran chapter number 17, verse number 59, it is all clear what it is talking about, because it's a detailed explanation and we are talking about these things, and I've shown these verses already. Now, what should we do? How do you reconcile, Isa?
I'm trying to figure out the best way to approach this situation.
Okay. Well, I can tell, and Adam, let me just tell you, there are people that take the Bible and do the same thing with the Bible as Isa is doing right now with the Quran. I disagree with them, but what they do is they take the Bible and they make everything metaphorical. And by making everything metaphorical, by denying the miracles, by denying what is clearly taught that was supposed to be taken as literal history, they are able to reconcile the Bible with what they perceive as being science or fact today. And in doing so, I honestly believe they do a disservice and they destroy the true message that we find in the Bible. But there are people who do that, people who hold advanced degrees in theology that do that. John Dominic Crossan is a great example of a guy that does it. The guy that was in charge of the Jesus seminar. And you look at all those scholars that were on that panel and that board of the Jesus seminar. This is what Isa, the way that he's approaching the Quran, from what I can see, is they did the same exact thing to the Bible.
But Eric, the problem is the Bible does not claim that it is a clear explanation of everything. It does not say that it is a mubeen kitab. Bible has different books which has metaphorical things and different things which has non-metaphorical. Bible does not claim that at all.
Well, there are parts of the Bible. Hold on a second. Yes. There are parts of the Bible that do claim that this is a true narration of what exactly happened.
No, exactly. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
When you look at the Gospel of Luke, you look at the book of Acts, then you have miracles in them.
Yes.
That say this is what actually happened.
That's what I'm saying. But it does not encapsulate the whole Bible. For example, if you look at the book of Revelation, it's mostly, rather, it should ideally be all metaphorical way, because it's talking about the vision of the future.
Oh, look, you don't believe in seven headed dragons? Then what's wrong with you? I mean, it's right there.
Okay. So now, Quran actually claims that this is a clear book, and now Quran actually claims that it clears the previous scriptures and etc. Now, when we talk about miracles, it has to be according to the previous scriptures, right? So now, going back to Isa, brother, how do you reconcile that?
So,
okay, Isa, let me just say this. You're going to get the last word because we're running out of time. Yeah, so go ahead.
I'll try to be brief and quick.
Okay, but don't screw it up either, though. Go ahead.
I'm going to try my best here. It's a tough. The Bai Adam always likes to put me into this trap. He likes to try to trap me.
He does a good job of painting people into corners. I'll give him that.
Yeah. It is very complex what we're dealing with here, because we're dealing with a spiritual text that overall I would say I'm trying to figure out the best way to word it. It's more like it has its own kind of overview. It's interesting that he was quoting the chapter on the prophet Joseph, right? Yusuf. That if you read the chapter, it's kind of very vague. So it's complex. It's a very complex question that we're asking here. What does detailed mean? How do we define details? Because the details we see, what we might define as detailed, It doesn't really look detailed to us.
Okay. I knew you were going to give me this. Quran chapter number 27, verse number 1. I knew you were going to go there. Brother, you cannot play chess with me. I intentionally left that verse out.
Let's see that.
I'm bringing it up. Give me a second here. There we go. All right, go ahead.
What does it say?
I don't know. It says, I will surely punish him with a severe punishment or slaughter him unless...
Brother, verse number one.
Oh, I
chapter number 27, verse number one.
That's an interesting verse, though. I mean,
yeah, sure, forget that one.
Okay, whatever. All right, here we go. It says, Kasin, these are the verses of the Quran and a clear book.
So these verses are clear verses of a Quran, which is a clear book.
Look in that ayah you just showed. What does Kasin mean? We don't know what that means. What's Aleph Lam Mim mean? What does Aleph Lam Mim Sad mean? We don't know what those mean.
I know what Yasin means. I know what Alif Lam Mim Swad means, and I know what it means, and I can show you that as well. So there are certain names of Allah which Muslims...
There's no agreement on that. Fine, there are people who will give...
that's another problem. But like the verse is clear. It says that it is a clear book with clear verses. Okay.
So now, what does the verse mean in this verse?
Okay, that's something which Quran, which you accept, has to give me an answer, because the verse is saying it is a book with clear verses. So now if you have a problem, that you have to give me the explanation on that. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm showing. Okay, if you do not like this, we can go to Quran chapter number 41, verse 23.
No, we're out of time, Adam. We can't be going.
41.3. Let me bring it up. I'll be very fast.
Hold on.
I'm already showing.
All right. Go ahead.
A book whose verses has been detailed, an Arabic Quran for a people who know. Now, my friend, please either try to reconcile these things, or you have to reject it. Become an atheist, quite frankly. Fit in a box. Do not be in a middle. You are like neither Jew nor Muslim nor Christian nor Muslim, yet you are Muslim. Like it's just so, like, I feel for you, quite frankly. You need to come out of this deception and accept one thing at least. And like, you know, you can't even defend that. You're going to go in a circle and you won't be able to defend it. Why do you do that with yourself, man?
Okay. Okay, Stephanie, I sent you that link like 15 minutes ago, and she wanted to come in and challenge you on a point, I think, Adam. Okay, look, we're going to go 5 more minutes and then we got to be done.
All right, let's let the lady have the last word.
All right, Stephanie, hello there. Man. Stephanie, hello.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Isa.
Okay, you got to speak clearly into your mic. We can't hear you. We can't understand you. Go ahead.
Okay. There is a problem with the hadith. Where it says, Prophet Muhammad said it. Where it says, the hadith of the monkeys, it's pre-Islamic period.
Can you guys understand what she's saying?
I know she has a huge issue.
Pre-Islamic experience, that's what I heard.
Okay, so pre-Islamic media, doesn't matter whether it's pre-Islamic or not.
Steph. Okay, you need...
It's matter. It's pre-Islamic period.
Okay, I can't...
What did Muhammad...
Okay, listen.
You want to put it in, right. Chat, Stephanie?
No. Here's what we'll do, Stephanie. Let's have this conversation next Tuesday night. And I understand because she sent me an IM in Facebook and she was very frustrated. And I get it. That's fine. But your connection, if I can't understand you, we can't answer your objections. And I honestly, I truly want to do this, have this conversation, but. If I can't understand what you're saying, We can't do it. So what we're going to do is we're going to wrap it up for the night. Everybody that came on tonight, contributed tonight, thank you so much for coming. People that were in the chat on Facebook and on YouTube, thank you for coming. People here in the panel that have been on the panel this evening, again, thank you for coming. Stephanie, thank you for coming. I appreciate you sending me that IM, but we need to get you some better connectivity, my lady. And Adam, thank you again for your presentation. Isa, we always appreciate your opinions. Even though we think you're wrong as the day is, it's okay. We love having you on here. And we like hearing, you know, and this is the thing, you know, if we didn't hear differing opinions, if we didn't hear the objections to what our beliefs are, it would be like sitting in an echo chamber and nothing ever gets accomplished. Nothing ever gets advanced. It just develops into, I don't know, the Democratic Party that we have in our country today. So God bless everybody. We will see you next Tuesday on Radio Free Kafiristan. Have a blessed evening.